Tonight, Sunday, August 22nd, reported by Garrick Utley.
Good evening. There is a very serious story tonight. A large stock of contaminated soup is on the market and has been recalled. We will have details. There has been a coup d'etat in Bolivia, and in Vietnam, Vice President Ki still hasn't said whether he will enter the presidential race. The Campbell Soup Company announced tonight that it was recalling 120,000 cans of chicken vegetable soup from 16 states because of possible botulism contamination. A company spokesman said the recall was a precaution following the discovery of botulism in chicken vegetable soup packed at its plant in Paris, Texas. He said no illness has yet been reported from the contaminated soup. The soup being recalled may be identified by this serial number on the can: 07P13701X. That's 07P13701X. Cans with that serial number were shipped to the following states: Alabama, Arkansas, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Nebraska, New Mexico, Mississippi, Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, and Wyoming. The company urged consumers in those states and in adjoining states to destroy any cans of the chicken vegetable soup they may have in their homes. Grocers were instructed to withdraw the soup from their shelves immediately. Last month, the Food and Drug Administration ordered the recall of all Bon Vivant soups after a man died of botulism poisoning from eating Bon Vivant vichyssoise. President Juan José Torres of Bolivia has been overthrown after a day of bloody fighting in La Paz, the capital. 50 persons were killed, more than 100 were wounded. Torres came to power in a coup last October. He pursued a leftist policy supported by tin miners, students, and some army units. The counter-coup broke out on Thursday, led by right-wing army leaders. They say they will form a junta and have promised to call elections soon. Former President Torres was granted asylum today in the Peruvian embassy in La Paz. In South Vietnam, Vice President Ki today said he will decide in the next 2 days whether to run in October's presidential election. The American ambassador in Saigon, Ellsworth Bunker, is pressuring Ki to run, the way he apparently pressured President Thieu and South Vietnam Supreme Court into allowing Ki's name to appear on the election ballot. The American involvement in Vietnamese politics deepened when a third candidate, General Minh, pulled out of the race. That left Thieu without an opponent.
General Minh's withdrawal from the presidential contest was a big shock to American diplomats here. The election was already tainted by the exclusion of Vice President Nguyen Cao Ky from the ballot. When General Minh withdrew, calling the election a colossal farce, it seemed that the election was discredited beyond repair.
The withdrawal embarrassed the U.S. Embassy. Ambassador Ellsworth Bunker had returned from talks with President Nixon, hoping to keep Minh in the race and to prevail upon Thieu to allow Vice President Nguyen Cao Ky's name on the ballot. It appeared that the ambassador had failed. But Bunker, who had been meeting with the principals all along, apparently had saved his big diplomatic guns for the last. Bunker held a meeting with President Nguyen Van Thieu in the presidential palace, and things began to happen. A presidential emissary visited the Supreme Court, and suddenly the court which had ruled Ki ineligible to run reversed itself and put the vice president on the ballot. The presidential race was now a contest, or so it seemed. Ki called a news conference. The Supreme Court decision put new pressure on the vice president. He had two choices, either to run or take the path chosen by General Minh and declare that the election is rigged. Ki's refusal to run would inflict tremendous political damage on President Thieu without risking defeat in the election. By pulling out, Ki might heighten anti-Thieu sentiment already expressed by students and veterans. Even the conservative Catholic Church, long a Thieu supporter, had denounced the election law and the president's apparent obsession for riding roughshod over the opposition in the interest of obtaining a massive mandate. Reporters expected a decision, but they didn't get it.
I believe that our decision cannot be made in haste, and I must take some time to consult with the leading political forces and religious forces in the nation. That is why today I shall not announce yet our decision, and I will see you later in another meeting.
This set the stage for a new round of meetings among the interested parties, an effort to nail down support for Key's candidacy and a possible raising of the American commitment to something that would pass, at least in the United States, for a fair election. Key's indecision also heightened the uncertainty in an already volatile situation. Arthur Lord, NBC News, Saigon.
In the war, American planes today made two raids in North Vietnam against anti-aircraft positions and missile sites. The raids were in retaliation for their firing on U.S. planes bombing the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Laos. Meanwhile, other U.S. planes and ships bombed and shelled North Vietnamese positions in the southern part of the demilitarized zone.
Texas. The cattle are part of the Santa Gertrudis herd, the first breed developed in America, now prized and bred in 48 lands. The Santa Gertrudis get nothing but the best, good grazing, good water. This stream flows from the world's largest natural gas plant, run by Humble Oil and Refining Company. The gas plant uses water for cooling, thousands of gallons an hour. When the water comes out of the gas plant, the Santa Gertrudis drink it. Enough said.
In Northern Ireland today, a terrorist bomb exploded at the main gate of a jail in Belfast. Five persons were wounded. The jail holds about half of the 230 members of the illegal Irish Republican Army who have been interned, jailed without trial. Seven more arrests were made today, and other bombings over the weekend have wrecked a telephone exchange, government offices, and stores. The terrorist strategy now is small-scale attacks rather than widespread fighting.
In Belfast, when a family lays claim to a home, neighbors pitch in to help make it livable. But the families do not necessarily return to their own homes. The segregation of Catholic and Protestant neighborhoods is becoming more complete. Catholics are moving into Catholic areas. Protestants are moving to Protestant areas, which fly the British flag and the white and red flag of Northern Ireland. Those who dare to continue living in mixed neighborhoods risk being burned out by Protestant or Catholic toughs out to enforce segregation. Sometimes there's a boarded up no man's land where no one at all dares to live for fear of being caught in the crossfire. Responsible Catholic leaders are trying to end the violence. This past week, they started a program of civil disobedience to cause a financial crisis for Northern Ireland's Protestant government and business community. As a part of the civil disobedience, a series of one-day strikes has been called. This one closed down most stores in Dungannon on Friday. Catholic leaders have also called a rent and tax strike throughout the region.
We saw today that the pressure of the ordinary people of Derry, the people who for 50 years were forgotten in the bog site.
But there are still incidents of violence. As Bernadette Devlin spoke in Dungannon, her younger brother was struck by a stone thrown from the edge of the crowd.
I would like to tell McCaffrey that if he doesn't find out who hit my young brother over the head with a stone, I'll take a prosecution against him.
The wound was superficial. It took only a few stitches to close it. Others are not so lucky. Deaths are still common in nightly shootings and bombings. This was the funeral in Londonderry of a 19-year-old killed in a gunfight with British troops.
Demolish.
We commit his body to the earth. Let it may return to that...
Although it's illegal, the outlawed Irish Republican Army provided an honor guard. They're taking a chance because the British Army has detained more than 100 suspected IRA sympathizers for around 2 weeks.
That he may raise him again at the last day and make him one with the saints in his kingdom. The Lord be with you. Let us pray for our brother Eamon. Pray to Jesus Christ our Lord.
For the moment, the big rioting seemed to have run its course. But the Minister for Community Relations in Northern Ireland warned the fabric of society was coming apart and the region was in danger of civil war.
We'd like to honor him by saying that his actions...
Robert Hager, NBC News, Northern Ireland.
Egypt announced today that it will seek the death penalty against former Vice President Ali Sabri and 90 others who are charged with plotting to overthrow President Anwar Sadat. Sabri was Moscow's leading supporter in the Egyptian government. Other defendants include former government ministers, a general, and the former head of the Egyptian intelligence service. The plot against President Sadat was uncovered last May. Today, the Egyptian government called it the greatest political crime in Egypt this century. The trials will start on Wednesday. Israel has devalued her currency by 20%. The move came late last night, the first devaluation by a country since President Nixon announced his new economic and monetary measures last week. The Israeli government also said it will impose strict price controls. The effect of it all is to lower imports and control inflation. That is also the point of the wage price freeze in this country. A reminder that NBC News will present two special programs to try and answer questions about the freeze. They will be tomorrow and Tuesday nights at 7:30 Eastern Time.
Would you fill her up?
This is Boeing's 747. She's five stories high. She's a city block long. She costs $20 million. She carries over 360 passengers. She guzzles about 4,000 gallons of jet fuel every hour. And when they filled her up for her first commercial flight, they filled her up with EMCO.
Prison officials at San Quentin said today that someone smuggled a revolver to George Jackson, a militant black who was shot dead yesterday while trying to break out of San Quentin. During the shooting and confusion, five other people were killed. Jackson was one of the Soledad brothers accused of killing a guard at Soledad Prison last year.
San Quentin was quiet today following Saturday's bloody escape attempt. Some Sunday morning visitors were unaware that anything had happened until they were turned away by a beefed-up guard force.
The special security measures were ordered immediately after the six people were killed. Authorities said they need the time to sort out the pieces and find out just what happened. What made this weekend the darkest days in San Quentin's history?
So far, it is known that George Jackson was returning to his cell in the prison's adjustment center and produced a gun while being searched. In the next 15 minutes, six people died. Three guards had their throats slashed, two inmates were killed by other inmates, and Jackson was shot to death by guards. Authorities believe they know what caused the trouble.
Well, at the root of the trouble, again, I believe, as I've said before, that you've got a lot of this nonsense revolutionary talk going on, the kill the pig talk. Our officers have to hear this all the time, particularly in the adjustment center. And again, as I've said before, this damnable rhetoric that goes on by so-called revolutionaries on the outside. Does a great deal of harm because you have people that are impressionable and unstable, locked up in prison, that take it very literally. And I think our recent assaults on officers stem largely from this irresponsible kind of blathering about the revolution and kill the pig and this kind of crap. We do have still a minority of the inmates, but it's an increasing percentage who are latched on to this sort of revolutionary rhetoric as yet one more rationalization for their criminal behavior.
The slain guards had served at the prison from 4 to 22 years. The inmates had been in and out of prison since childhood. Tonight, all prisoners are locked up in their cells as guards search for more weapons. And other law enforcement officers are hunting for the person who visited Jackson just prior to the escape attempt. Warren Wilson, NBC News, San Francisco.
The FBI early today caught an anti-war group in the act as it was trying to steal records from a draft board in Camden, New Jersey. 20 persons were arrested, including 2 Catholic priests and a Protestant minister. Also in Buffalo, New York, the FBI and local police late last night arrested 5 persons found inside federal offices housing a draft board and an Army intelligence unit. But the big raid was in Camden. It was well planned and well infiltrated by the FBI.
This was the headquarters of the alleged conspiracy. For 4 months, as many as 27 people worked here on a plot to burglarize the Camden Selective Service Office, the FBI office, and a U.S. Army Intelligence Center. They had maps, charts, radios, transceivers, mock-ups of federal building windows, glass-cutting tools, and according to the FBI, they were being taught how to pick locks, exactly like the ones in the federal building. The FBI infiltrated the group several months ago. Today, when the burglary was to occur, agents were there. The alleged conspirators went up a fire escape at the back of the building. They knew enough to avoid the first section. It had an alarm. They got into the Selective Service Office on the 4th floor and ransacked it, throwing records into 12 large brown bags, then tossed the bags out the window. FBI agents recovered them today. They will be held as evidence. The arraignment took more than 12 hours. When it was over, 18 defendants had been held on bail, ranging from $5 to $150,000. 2, both clergymen, were permitted to sign their own bonds. The Reverend Milo Billman and Barry James Mussey were released. Others could not make the bail. Defense Attorney Bernard Siegel said it was excessive. He said the government is not asking for bail, it is asking for ransom. Wes Sargentson, KYW News in Camden, New Jersey.
Sir, fill it with Enco Extra.
If you pull into an Enco station and the service seems to be a little overeager, it might be that you pulled into a dealer training school run by Humble Oil and Refining Company. Schools are scattered across the country and they look like any other well-run station. The only difference is they're set up to train future Enco dealers to go out later and run their own stations. The course lasts 6 weeks. It includes classroom instruction on engines, brake systems, tires, cooling systems, and other technical things. And it requires every prospective dealer to go out and do all the things that should be done to serve his customers better. Of course, you won't meet 5 training school graduates every time you pull into an Enco station, but there's a good chance you'll meet at least one.
In a series of reports from correspondent John Rich, we've been looking at Japan, economically the world's new superpower. Japan is America's biggest trading partner. Japanese products are the biggest competition or threat to American business. But Japan is also becoming this country's main competitor in foreign markets around the world. An example is Australia.
The Australians are taking a new look at Japan. 25 years ago, the two countries were bitter enemies. Today, Australia earns 1/4 of its national income from Japan. The Japanese have replaced the British and the Americans as Australia's top trading partner. Japanese who come to Sydney are not considered as former enemies, but as businessmen who are bringing prosperity. In a nation notorious throughout Asia for its White Australia policy, Japanese faces are becoming more familiar on the streets. There are 2,000 Japanese businessmen from 150 firms now in Australia. To maintain their traditions in the alien culture down under, the Japanese send their children to a Japanese school. The school is presently located in a war memorial.
What stories did your teachers tell you when you were in Tokyo in kindergarten?
The staff includes Australian teachers.
About cats, about dogs. All right, these are all stories. You know, a cat sits up and says good morning, and a dog turns around and says good morning to it. Not true.
Australians generally have reservations and suspicions about the Japanese, but those who work with the Japanese admit they've been impressed and have had to reevaluate some of their past opinions. One of the large Japanese-Australian operations is a wood chip plant 300 miles south of Sydney. It is entirely Japanese-owned. The original Australian partner ran into financial trouble and was bought out by the Japanese. Both the manager and the assistant manager are Japanese. Trees are felled. They're cut and hauled to the mill, where they are processed and turned into mountains of wood chips. They go to Japan for making carbon paper. The biggest Japanese investments are in Western Australia, in iron ore, urgently needed by Japan's mammoth steel industry. Mount Whaleback is one of the richest and largest deposits of iron ore ever discovered. Over 1 billion tons of high-grade ore. About 75% of the production is going to Japan. The Japanese have also invested heavily in the consortium running the mine. Already more than 300 million tons of the rich ore have been contracted for, mostly by Japan. Special 120-ton trucks cart the ore off the hill. After preliminary crushing, it's loaded into 150-car freight trains. 100 tons of ore go into each car. At Port Hedland, a rotary dumper unloads 2 cars at a time. The ore moves by endless belt through final processing, then into storage to await the arrival of the ore freighters. The Japanese complain that immigration red tape prevents them from sending as many technicians as they would like to work in Australia. It may be partly a result of the white Australia tradition, partly objections from powerful Australian trade unions, partly Australian fears of being overwhelmed by Japan's giant industrial machine. Through the simple laws of international economics, the Japanese and the Australians have developed a new relationship. The bonds are still delicate, but the business partnership promises to grow even bigger and closer in the future. Leaders in both countries hope that as a result, past differences will gradually fade away. This is John Rich, NBC News, at Cape Lambert in Western Australia.
When leaders come together, it's what leadership is.
This is a most unusual laboratory operated by the Humble Companies Foundation. You won't see any scientists or test tubes here. Just young people talking about leadership.
Everybody in the room is a leader.
And looking over it again, I can see that I was wrong.
This one person who disagreed practically convinced all of us 7 to vote his way.
Everybody at the table is looking towards me and up to me or down to me.
I felt like you were being...
Every month, this scene takes place in a different part of the country. College students, educators, and employees of Humble Oil meet in these leadership labs.
How about you? You were very fresh into the group.
This is non-leadership.
Leadership is negative.
What do we get out of this? Well, for one thing, a better understanding of other people and of ourselves.
Right on.
Carl Solomensky of Wayne, New Jersey, died yesterday, a month after the kidney transplant he'd hoped would give him a normal life. Solomensky's plight was described in this program 6 weeks ago. He suffered from a kidney disease, but the artificial kidney machine he had to use caused him so much discomfort, he threatened to give it up, even if it meant death. His alternative was a transplant. He advertised for a donor in the newspaper and got one. but he never recovered from the operation. He was 39 years old. Governor George Wallace of Alabama today said he'll issue more orders next week against the busing of school children in his state. And Governor Preston Smith of Texas says he'll obey the decisions of the courts on whether he can continue to defy President Nixon's wage price freeze. Vice President Agnew says he isn't worried about Treasury Secretary Connally will replace him as President Nixon's running mate next year. Agnew denies his relations with the president have cooled. Now, let's look at some of the important events in the week coming up.
In Washington this week, the government will expand its surveillance for violations of the wage, price, and rent freeze. The Internal Revenue Service will join the Office of Emergency Preparedness in accepting complaints. The Justice Department has orders to stop the defiance of Governor Preston Smith of Texas, who says he will ignore the freeze and give state employees pay raises. The Meat Cutters Union will go to court trying to obtain pay raises blocked by the freeze. The Office of Emergency Preparedness will mail to every home answers to frequently asked questions about the freeze. Ron Nesson, NBC News, Washington.
European money markets will reopen tomorrow. By week's end, it should be clear what the dollar is now worth on this side of the Atlantic. In Berlin, the ambassadors of the United States, Britain, France, and the Soviet Union meet again tomorrow on a Berlin settlement. The signs are that they are finally nearing agreement. The main issue is free access to Berlin. With relations between London and Dublin at a new low, the Irish Republic this week is expected to step up its support of the Catholic civil disobedience campaign in Northern Ireland. Ray Scheller, NBC News, London.
Here in Vietnam, National Assembly elections are scheduled for next Sunday. The voting could indicate how much opposition President Thieu will face in the upcoming presidential elections in October. President Nixon's new economic program is still the main topic in the financial centers of Asia. Industrial leaders may decide this week to cut prices of exports to the United States to counter the new 10% import surcharge. And in Indonesia, Queen Juliana of the Netherlands begins an official visit, the first by a reigning Dutch monarch since Indonesia won its independence from the Netherlands in 1949. Arthur Lord, NBC News, Saigon.
And of course, in the week ahead in Vietnam, it will become clear, maybe, whether Vice President Ky is or is not going to run in the presidential election there, and whether South Vietnam is or is not going to have an election which at least has the appearance of being fair, open, and democratic. Good night for NBC News.
This has been the NBC Sunday Night News, brought to you by Humble Oil and Refining Company and Enco Retailers.